Hi, I'm Peter Clark. This is Inside Language with linguist Kate Burridge. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Good to see you again. Between you and I, that's the opener for today's podcast, because you and I are hearing and reading that everywhere, aren't we? Between you and I, what happened to me?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because these little words, these little grammatical words are supposed to take the back seat and we're not supposed to notice them, but they've become very obvious. They've become quite fraught and loaded with social meaning too as well. Interestingly, something like between you and I has been in the language for quite some time now. Shall I perhaps begin at the beginning with what's happening with these pronouns?
Pronouns generally, they're interesting little things, aren't they?
They are.
And while the rest of our words don't have funny endings for case or we've got S's for number, you know, plurals, but pronouns live in another world, don't they?
Well, you're quite right. They hang on to these grammatical endings quite successfully. They've disappeared from nouns and the modifiers of nouns, but something like I versus me or he versus him. So originally they would have been depending on the function of these little words. So is it the subject of the sentence? Does it do the verb? Or is it the receiver of the action, the object? So I is the subject and me is the object. But things are changing and has been for quite some time, in that the form of these little words seems to be now dictated more by not their function, but where they occur, their position in the sentence.
By function, you mean their grammatical function.
Their grammatical function.
Coming after a preposition, coming after a transitive verb, they take a case.
That's right. Yes, indeed. Problem is when you get these pronouns conjoined. So the I, you know, Fred and me or Fred and I. So something like he gave it to me is fine. He gave it to Fred and me is fine. But the problem is that there was such a queasiness, I suppose. There were people that then, if it was a conjoined pronoun, would use the me if it was the subject. So Fred and me went to town rather than Fred and I went to town. Of course, they wouldn't say me went to town, but it was something about it being conjoined, so being after the and, that put it in a different position and maybe made it feel like it was, you know, not quite subjecty enough or something like that. So that was this idea of pressure of position, as it's sometimes called, the position dictating the form you get. Parents, I suppose, teachers would then say, don't you say Fred and me, say Fred and I. But it's not that straightforward. So people in there wanting to avoid the Fred and me would then overcorrect and would say Fred and I for all of them. He gave it to Fred and I, between you and I. And that's how you got that spread of I, or in fact the other pronouns as well.
I is a bit embarrassing sometimes. We call it the perpendicular pronoun. Don't use it so much. Yet here we have, ironically, people saying between my husband and I.
It's easy to say there are three systems around at the moment. There's the sort of standard one, the one that gets the stamp of approval from grammar books, and that's the form in those little phrases. The form of the pronoun is according to its function. So I went to town, Fred and I went to town. He gave it to me, he gave it to Fred and me. So that's one system. Then there are the ones that use me across the board. Fred and me went to town, he gave it to Fred and me. And then there are the ones that, well, it might have started off with this squeamishness about using me and then overcorrect with I. So it's Fred and I went to town, he gave it to Fred and I, or between you and I. So you've got these sort of three systems going on. But you're right about the I kind of attracting attention to itself. And some people use that myself as a, well, I used to think it was a kind of an escape hatch. You know, you don't know whether to use I, you don't know whether to use me, so you use myself. There might be a bit of that going about. But so if you were to say something, he gave it to myself.
There's a certain distancing going on there.
There is. And in fact, someone, a linguist, has once, well, dubbed this the a modesty device. It's been in the language for quite some time. Jane Austen used myself in that way. I've been looking at Captain Cook's journals recently. He uses myself and yourself in that interesting way. Now, someone like Captain Cook would not have confused I and me, not back then. It's not the verbal escape hatch I thought it was. I think this modesty device is perhaps something there, because you do sort of swallow that myself.
Let's come back to between Fred and I. Has that entrenched itself now? A standard phrase.
Most certainly. And I had a call from a radio presenter, in fact, who was getting all of these irritated callers saying, because he would say something like between you and me, and they were saying, you know, you're wrong, and because they're so determined they're right. And he was then, you know, at what stage is right and wrong here, or when does wrong become right? It's always been murky. You can't win, really.
So those little pronouns are, to some extent, from what you're saying, Kate, becoming unshackled from their strict grammatical function.
Yes, that's right. And look, it started, if you think of expressions like, he's bigger than me. We were always told at school, you know, 100 years ago, he's bigger than I, because it's bigger than I am is the thinking. But of course, it's unusual to have that I in that position immediately after than, which could be treated as a preposition like between and also to. Bigger than me sounds much more natural than bigger than I, which sounds a bit highfalutin now and a bit odd. And same with it is I. I mean, who would say, you know, it's I?
Kate, when I was at school, we learnt about verbs to be from that cluster of verbs called copular verbs. Mm-hmm. And what we had drummed into us was these verbs take the same case before them as after them. So the old joke about the English teacher arriving at the pearly gates, St. Peter says, who's there? And the English teacher says, it is I. And Peter, of course, says, oh, another bloody English teacher. But very rarely do we say these days, it is I, which is strictly correct. Does that fit into the same pattern?
It's exactly the same, because there, if you again think of the pressure of position, that pronoun is after the verb, not before the verb, which is where you'd expect, the subject form, the I form. So it's more natural to have me there. Or if you were to say, who's coming to the party? I say, me. You wouldn't say I. So we're a bit like French in that way, where me is the default, really, the default pronoun, or, you know, him, or to use those other pronouns, her. But you're dead right about these things being drummed into you. And when they're drummed into you, you really don't want to give them up, do you? And that's why these things become such, well, they're so powerful and such good social passwords, really. And the more difficult they are, the longer it took you to learn them, the more you're going to hang on to them, and the more you're going to sort of look askance at those that maybe say, you know, it is me or it's me.
The trajectory seems to be that, particularly with prepositions, it's going to be I rather than me in a lot of constructions. But finally, Kate, what about transitive verbs? I saw one in print the other day after the verb to photograph. Photographed Joe Hockey and I. It was a journalist. Is that happening as well? That's right. Different pattern?
No, it's the same pattern, because it's conjoined exactly. So you'd expect he photographed me. Of course, there's no problem there. Although I'll come back to a moment, because there are some dialects that would say he photographed I. But when you conjoin it with that and, there it is after and again. Perhaps if I just mention these dialects where you do get, well, it's sometimes called a pronoun exchange. So you get these pronouns switching places. An example that I read recently was give it to he and they, her don't need it. So you're getting these forms which would normally, you know, well, her, for example, her don't need it. You'd expect she doesn't need it. They're very interesting. It's not quite as straightforward as they're switching places, but certainly you get the object forms in the subject function, and you get the subject ones in the object function.
Final question. Are we seeing pronouns then dissolving away in terms of their clear case markers?
That's right. They used to be very neatly aligned with their grammatical function. Are they the subject? Are they the object? But now it's this pressure of position, as it's sometimes been described, where it occurs in the sentence. You know, does it occur after and, the conjunction and? Does it occur after a preposition? You know, or is it an initial position? So it all has to do with the position. And that's where English has been drifting now for some centuries. And it's not just Australian English or, you know, New Zealand English where you get these problems or these difficulties now with pronouns. It's all over the English-speaking world.
The battle between change and that deep lust for certainty in our language, that's part of our theme in these podcasts, and that battle goes on.
That battle will always go on, Peter.
Thanks, Kate. See you again soon.
We'll see you soon. I look forward to that.
Kate Burridge is Professor of Linguistics at Monash University here in Melbourne, Australia. I'm Peter Clark for Inside Language. Until next time.